Savitri, Book 2, The Book of the Traveler of the Worlds, Canto 7, The Descent into Night. This is part 2 of 3 parts. It goes from pages 208 through 214. The traveler has started on the downward path. He is moving into the inconscient matter, which makes up the substance of our physical material world. He wrote for us that the king, who is of course Sri Aurobindo, that the king turned his gaze away from nature's visible face and looked for the real cause of life's failure. In the Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo wrote that the proper function of the life energy, which it's not doing, and that's why he's doing all this, the proper function of the life energy is to do what is bidden by the divine principle in us, which is our soul, our psychic being. And what is bidden is to reach to and enjoy what is given to it by the indwelling divine, and not to desire at all. He has already explained for us that although life plunged into the complete unconsciousness of our matter, so that we would have all of her highest to do what the soul tells us to do, while she was on the way, before her gifts could reach our prisoned hearts, and we know the heart chakra is the place where our soul does reside, he explained that in the cosmic movements on the higher planes, the secret will that robes itself with night and offers to the spirit the ordeal of the flesh imposed a mystic mask of death and pain. So as long as our spirit has chosen to take birth in a physical body, our spirit, us, has to go through the ordeal of the flesh. Last time, in the beginning of Canto 7, in beautiful mystic images, he told us the underlying causes. He saw the fount of the world's lasting pain and the mouth of the black pit of ignorance because he's starting. He saw the evil guarded at the roots of life, and he saw, behind the ignorance that was there, a gray carved mask of night appeared. And this mask had something and whispered something that brought a fatal influence upon creatures. Its lethal touch overcast our soul's native will for truth and joy and light. Then the traveler of the worlds experiences the first place, which Sri Aurobindo describes as being under these dark influences. And although these sound really horrible, when he, in his very, very expert and dramatic way, can really evoke them for us, if we become really conscious of ourselves and others, we can see all this, and we can apply all of this information to our lives, and we do make our lives better, and we make the world better. So the first place that he went to, this no man's land, had unreality as its lord. And it was a land of evil air. He was in a space where nothing could be true. So we are entering into a falsehood. A vast deception was the law of things and beings at that level of life's emergence out of the unconscious into our creation. Sri Aurobindo is giving us the truth. And in other writings, he gives us the truth about how we can move beyond these influences in our own lives. In the Synthesis of Yoga, he explains about our lower vital being, the part of us that can be under the influence of all the things that he's describing for us. And Sri Aurobindo is going to go on experiencing life in successively unconscious levels all the way to the very bottom. We have to remember that the path that the traveler is on is in his own being, in his own body, as well as in the universal planes. We all have that path within us. Our life energies make up our vital being, and the king's consciousness is in his own being, on the lower vital planes, and with this, he can connect and experience what is going on. Here is some of his advice to the early Ashramites. There were many letters, and here he says something about how to be beyond all this. You find it in the letters of yoga. He says, quote, "The region of our lower vital being, our lower vital being, is in our body, from the navel downwards." And then he says, quote, "It is the place of the reign, of the rule, of the vital passions and sensations, and all the small life impulses that constitute the bulk of ordinary human life and character." This is us in our daily lives. And in this, these more darker things can come. This is what he calls lower vital nature. It's only concerned with small greeds, small desires, small passions, etc., etc. It is our place for the stupendous play of passion, of joy, of grief, love, hate, wrath, fear, disgust, likes and dislikes, hopes, content, discontent. It goes on forever. Then he says that the deformation of our emotional or vital mind, which allows it to be so distorted, hinges upon the duality of liking and disliking. It is our automatic habit of emotional attraction and repulsion, which lets these things in us and allows them to move us and possess us. We can see it throughout history, and somehow in these present days, those people who are a little bit aware and a little bit have developed can see the result of it happening all around them. All the complexity of our emotions and their tyranny, their hold over the soul, arises from the habitual responses of the soul of desire in the emotions and sensations. These are the responses which are these attractions and repulsions, or are responding to attractions and repulses. Love and hate, hope and fear, grief and joy, and this whole huge list of stuff, all have their founts, their beginnings, their source, in this one source, the vital mind. The mind of desire and sensation is the creator of the sense of evil. And then, because it moves us, and people do these things, as we are going to see, and in fact we know some of, so it is also the creator of the fact of evil. So we begin to know that we have a machinery in our own makeup, which has come this far in the evolution of consciousness. And it is open to these lower vital worlds. It reflects them, and it responds to them, as long as we're unconscious beings. So how do we go beyond it? Sri Aurobindo speaks of this desire coming from the likes and dislikes as a habit of our emotional nature. And he says it gets in the way of the intelligent will and makes it the slave, the helpless slave of the emotional being, or at the least, it prevents the will, the intelligent will, from exercising a free judgment and government of our nature. And this deformation has to be corrected. Our secret inner vital nature is in contact with the vital plane. Sri Aurobindo says it is a life world, and our inner vital nature is easily open to it, and we feel, although we don't know it, the unseen dynamic forces and realities which are going on all the time beyond our universe of physical life. And usually we're concentrated on the outside, not the inside, so we don't see it. Our very vital being is molded consciously or unconsciously by these influences. and it makes us beings of desire and sensation, of passion and force and emotion. Our mental force is often the slave to the vital force. So our mental life is just our mind going on and on in a kind of slavery to all these vital forces. So we get rid of desire in the soul's life force, and it's coming and going in the emotional mind by a constant vigilant rejection over and over and over. This purifies. This way, we make the whole correction easier because, as Sri Aurobindo says, then attachment, which is the strong bond of the heart, this attachment falls away from the heartstrings. The involuntary habit of liking and disliking is still there, but now it is not being made obstinate by attachment, and it can be dealt with much more easily by the will and the intelligence. Our restless heart, which is the surface, the place of the vital, not the deep place of the soul within, which is a place of peace, the restless heart can be conquered and get rid of the habit of attraction and repulsion, liking and disliking and all that. And then, secondly, our inner higher mental being has to separate itself from association and self-identification with the desires and all the struggles, sorrows, loves, hates, etc., etc. We know now that all these are actually the workings and habits of nature in our vital and in our mind as we have evolved so far today. We have to be constantly, constantly vigilant and remember again, and remember again. It's a long work. Remember that we are not the thing that sorrows. We are not the thing that suffers. We are not the thing that gets angry, all of those things. Then the mind draws back from its emotions, and it becomes only the witness. Then we become the master of all these automatic movements of nature, and that includes, of course, all the things that Sri Aurobindo is describing for us here. And with this mastery, all of it falls away from the liberated psychic being, from our free soul. And this is not only good for us and a great relief, of course, it is good for all humanity and the future. If we can slow down enough and purify our beings enough, we can experience in our own thought patterns, in our feelings and emotions, the actual ways we gather from others, the things that attract us, the things we want to be like, the things we want to have around us. We never stop trying to recreate ourselves by this method. We just don't realize we are doing it. You can feel it in babies. If you hold a small child, if you're really sensitive, the child cannot speak, but in its consciousness, it's soaking up everything out of you like a little sponge. It's just the whole being is greedy for a kind of nourishment that it's supposed to get, which it gets from other people. Of course, you don't lose anything, but the child is open, and by the way it's made and its nature, it takes in all of that. And when we know that this is who we are and how we do things, we have the possibility of conscious control. So the traveler is descending into night. And as he moved on, the scene changed, but kept its dreadful core. The outer form changed, but life was the same. As we saw last time, everyone walked alone in his own darkness. But here it's worse. The only thing everyone agreed on was that everyone should be on her path or his path of evil. The ego was the lord of that place, the ego, along with falsehood. So we are really in the kingdom and domain of ego and falsehood. There was no truth, no freedom, just violence and misuse of power. And therefore, the beings were committing vile sins. But we will see that everyone believes they were not sinful, and they did what they punished others for doing. A lie was a truth there, and the truth there was a lie. And actually, as we get more conscious, even today, we can look around us at life, at politics, at everything that comes to us through the media, at people that we meet, and we can see some of what he's going to describe to us. In this part of the canto, Sri Aurobindo does give us some advice. One of the things he points out is, he says, daring hell's kingdoms is the heavenly root. And what he means by that is that the more conscious you become, the higher you have to be, the lower, and so more comes into your consciousness, and there you are. You see it, you know you're subject to it. So this is what he says. In order for the traveler on the upward way to get through all of this, they have to have this consciousness. The traveler of the upward way must pause when all this becomes evident, or pass slowly through that perilous space, keeping a prayer upon his lips and the great name. We have to be very discerning and keep a watch all around to escape from falsehood's net and evil's spear point. And these are very evocative images. We don't know we are suddenly caught in a net that's all false, or we are being speared by something of evil that's coming into our being in a subtle way. And he says, to be safe in a place like this, we have to keep God in our heart and be an actual hero and have the courage to be a soldier of light. But as bad as all this falsehood and ego is, Sri Aurobindo is going to tell us that though hell claimed rule, the spirits still had power at this more upper level. So the king passes through this no man's land without debate. Him the heights missioned, him the abyss desired. None stood across his way, no voice forbade. For swift and easy is the downward path. And now his face was turned towards night. So a greater darkness waited for the king and for us, as we read, a worse reign, where God and truth and the supernal light had never been, or else did not have power anymore at all. He crossed into a place of perverted power, where life displayed her shadow depths. There she was degraded, deformed, a strong and fallen goddess without hope. And he saw life's dramas of the sorrow of the depths. They are written on the agonized nerves of living things. Here Sri Aurobindo speaks of physical perversion and lust and sin. Agony was made a red spiced food for bliss. All nature was pulled out of her frame, out of her base, and twisted into an unnatural pose. Beauty was banned. The heart's feeling was dulled to sleep. Here, life wants only sensations, physical thrills, and sense appeal in the physical. And with this cutting out of everything else, the filth and festering secrets of the abyss, of the inconscient, rose up to sully the air with filth. And in this kingdom it was called positive fact and real life. Sri Aurobindo writes these terrible and tragic things much more graphically and much more realistically than one sees and experiences them often. Sometimes people actually do know that's going on. And sometimes we get some of it and we kind of screen it out because we really can't handle it. But he is describing things that are in the world today, things for us to see, to hear, and to learn from, and to become free of. Next time, he will tell us how the king makes his way through this experience of life's fall into matter and unconscious. Now he's just going to describe it for us. So this is the second part, Descent into Night. Then the scene changed, but kept its dreadful core. Altering its form, the life remained the same. A capital was there without a state. It had no ruler, only groups that strove. He saw a city of ancient ignorance, founded upon a soil that knew not light. There, each in his own darkness, walked alone. Only they agreed to differ in evil's paths, to live in their own way, for their own selves, or to enforce a common lie and wrong. There, ego was lord upon his peacock seat, and falsehood sat by him, his mate and queen. The world turned to them as heaven to truth and God. Injustice, justified by firm decrees, the sovereign weights of error's legalized trade. But all the weights were false, and none the same. Ever she watched with her balance and a sword, lest any sacrilegious word expose the sanctified formulas of her old misrule. In high professions, rapt self-will walked wide, and license stalked, prating of order and right. There was no altar raised to liberty. True freedom was abhorred and hunted down. Harmony and tolerance nowhere could be seen. Each group proclaimed its dire and naked law. A frame of ethics knobbed with scriptural rules, or a theory passionately believed and praised, a table seemed of high heaven's sacred code. A formal practice, mailed and iron-shod, gave to a rude and ruthless warrior kind, drawn from the savage bowels of the earth, a proud, stern poise of harsh nobility, a civic posture, rigid and formidable. But all their private acts belied the pose. Power and utility were their truth and right. An eagle rapacity clawed its coveted good, beaks pecked, and talons tore all weaker prey. In their sweet secrecy of pleasant sins, nature they obeyed, and not a moralist god. Inconscient traitors, in bundles of contraries, they did what in others they would persecute. When their eyes looked upon their fellow's vice, an indignation flamed, a virtuous wrath. Oblivious of their own deep-hid offense, mob-like, they stoned a neighbor caught in sin. A pragmatist judge within passed false decrees, posed worse iniquities on equity's base, reasoned ill actions just, sanctioned the scale of the merchant ego's interest and desire. Thus was a balance kept. The world could live. A zealot fervor pushed their ruthless cults. All faith not theirs bled, scourged as heresy. They questioned, captived, tortured, burned, or smote, and forced the soul to abandon right or die. Amid her clashing creeds and warring sects, Religion sat upon a blood-stained throne. 100 tyrannies oppressed and slew, and founded unity upon fraud and force. Only what seemed was prized as real there. The ideal was a cynic ridicule's butt, hooted by the crowd, mocked by enlightened wits. Spiritual seeking wandered outcasted, a dreamer's self-deceiving web of thought, or mad chimera deemed, or hypocrite's fake. Its passionate instinct trailed through minds obscure, lost in the circuits of the ignorance. A lie was there the truth, and truth a lie. Here must the traveler of the upward way, for daring hell's kingdoms winds the heavenly route, pause or pass slowly through that perilous space, a prayer upon his lips and the great name. If probed not all discernment's keen spear point, he might stumble into falsity's endless net. Over his shoulder, often he must look back, like one who feels on his neck an enemy's breath, else, stealing up behind, a treasonous blow might prostrate cast and pin to unholy soil, pierced through his back by evil's poignant stake. So might one fall on the eternal's road, forfeiting the spirit's lonely chance in time, and no news of him reach the waiting gods, marked missing in the register of souls, his name the index of a failing hope, the position of a dead, remembered star. Only were safe who kept God in their hearts, courage their armor, faith their sword. They must walk, the hand ready to smite, the eye to scout, casting a javelin regard in front, heroes and soldiers of the army of light. Hardly even so, the grisly danger passed, released into a calmer, purer air, they dared at length to breathe and smile once more. Once more they moved beneath a real sun. Though hell claimed rule, the spirit still had power. This no man's land he passed without debate. Him the heights missioned, him the abyss desired. None stood across his way, no voice forbade. For swift and easy is the downward path, and now towards the night was turned his face. A greater darkness waited, a worse reign, if worse can be, where all is evil's extreme. Yet to the cloaked, the uncloaked is naked worst. There God and truth and the supernal light had never been, or else had power no more. As when one slips in a deep moment's trance over mind's border into another world, he crossed a boundary whose stealthy trace I could not see, but only the soul feel. Into an armored, fierce domain he came and saw himself wandering like a lost soul amid grimed walls and savage slums of night. Around him crowded gray and squalid huts, neighboring proud palaces of perverted power, inhuman quarters and demoniac wards. A pride in evil hugged its wretchedness, a misery haunting splendor pressed those who fell, dun suburbs of the cities of dream life. There, life displayed to the spectator soul the the shadow depths of her strange miracle. A strong and fallen goddess without hope, obscured, deformed by some dire Gorgon spell, as might a harlot empress in a bouge, nude, unashamed, exalting, she upraised her evil face of perilous beauty and charm, and, drawing panic to a shuddering kiss, twixt the magnificence of her fatal breasts, allured to their abyss, the spirits fall. Across his field of sight, she multiplied, as on a scenic film or moving plate, the implacable splendor of her nightmare pomps. On the dark background of a soulless world, she staged, between a lurid light and shade, her dramas of the sorrow of the depths, written on the agonized nerves of living things. Epics of horror and grim majesty, wry statues spat and stiffened in life's mud. A glut of hideous forms and hideous deeds, paralyzed pity in the hardened breast. In booths of sin and night repairs of vice, styled infamies of the body's concupiscence and sordid imaginations etched in flesh, turned lust into a decorative art. Abusing nature's gift, her pervert skill immortalized the sown grain of living death. In a mud goblet poured the Bacchic wine, to a satyr gave the thyrsus of a god. Impure, sadistic, with grimacing mouths, gray, foul inventions, gruesome and macabre, came televisioned from the gulfs of night. Her craft, ingenious in monstrosity, impatient of all natural shape and poise, a gape of nude, exaggerated lines gave caricature a stark reality. And art parades of weird, distorted forms and gargoyle masks, obscene and terrible, trampled to tormented postures the torn sense. An inexorable evil's worshipper, she made vileness great and sublimated filth. A dragon power of reptile energies and strange epiphanies of groveling force, and serpent grandeurs couching in the mire, drew adoration to a gleam of slime. All nature pulled out of her frame and base was twisted into an unnatural pose. Repulsion stimulated inert desire. Agony was made a red-spiced food for bliss. Hatred was trusted with the work of lust, and torture took the form of an embrace. A ritual anguish consecrated death. Worship was offered to the undivine. A new aesthesis of Inferno's art that trained the mind to love what the soul hates, imposed allegiance on the quivering nerves and forced the unwilling body to vibrate. Too sweet and too harmonious to excite in this regime that soiled the being's core, beauty was banned, the heart's feeling dulled to sleep, and cherished in their place sensation's thrills. The world was probed for jets of sense appeal. Here, cold material intellect was the judge and needed sensual prick and jog and lash that its hard dryness and dead nerves might feel some passion and power and acrid point of life. A new philosophy theorized evil's rights, gloried in the shimmering rot of decadence, or gave to a python force persuasive speech and armed with knowledge the primeval brute. Over life and matter, only brooding bowed, mind changed to the image of a rampant beast. It scrambled into the pit to dig for truth and lighted its search with the subconscious flares. Thence, bubbling rose, sullying the upper air, the filth and festering secrets of the abyss. This it now called positive fact and real life. This now composed the fetid atmosphere. A wild beast passion crept from secret night to watch its prey with fascinating eyes. Around him, like a fire with sputtering tongues, there lolled and laughed a bestial ecstasy. The air was packed with longings, brute and fierce, crowding and stinging in a monstrous swarm, pressed with a noxious hum into his mind, thoughts that could poison nature's heavenliest breath, forcing reluctant lids, assailed the sight, acts that revealed the mystery of hell. All that was there was on this pattern made.